the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Jim Bowden, CBS Sports, The Athletic, Sirius XM, MLB Radio. Of course, longtime baseball executive. He's been around the game for, we'll get into it in a second. But Jim, thanks for giving us a few minutes. Appreciate your time.
Well, great to be back on you, and it's okay to call me old, and it's okay to call it decades. I don't have a problem with it. Thank you.
I think that's a great thing. I'm like, all I'm searching for is decades with an S at the end of my job, where I'm like, all right, we can hang it up a little bit. We can relax a little bit, Jim. I got a long way to go.
Yeah, no doubt. But you never want to give up, right? You never want to stop. Like, I think the goal of Tom Cruise, I think, said it best. Mission Impossible comes out tomorrow, the final chapter or whatever. And he said he's planning on making movies till he's 110, and I'm not doubting him. And I'm kind of in the same line when it comes to baseball. I want to do this forever. I love the sport so much.
Well, I want to tie some, before we get to the Guardians, I want to tie a couple things to the Browns because we're just a football-centric city. So there's two things in particular I want to discuss. The first one, you made the trade for Deion Sanders just so many years ago at this point, but you were around Deion, obviously, because you made the trade for him. Do you still stay in touch with Deion at all?
Yeah, I do. And, I acquired Deion twice, and it's kind of funny because in my career, and I was a GM for 16 and a half years, and during my career, I only gave two no-trade clauses. One was to Hall of Famer Barry Larkin, and the other one was Deion Sanders. And I gave it to him the second time I had him because I told him that if I didn't give him a no trade, that I was going to trade him again in July because, doesn't have a really good arm, right? Drove me crazy in center field because he went after balls like a secondary, a cornerback would or a safety would, right? And so he always drove me crazy, but the speed was great. The makeup was great. The swing was great. You know, I said if he had played baseball full time, he could have been in the conversation with Ricky Henderson and Tim Raines. The one thing about Deion that separated himself, though, is he was never what the image was outside of the clubhouse. And in the clubhouse, he was humble and literally one of the best teammates that I ever had in my career. And his goal was to make everybody around him better. And so that's, I brought him back that second time because I needed him in the clubhouse. I needed him so guys could get better. I remember Barry Larkin telling me one day, and of course he's a Hall of Famer, but telling me how Deion taught him to watch the outfielder's heel. And if you ever see him on the heel, take the next base. He won't get you. He won't be able to position his feet. A little thing, but it was something that even Barry learned. A Hall of Fame player learned from him. And that's what Deion was. Deion studied. Deion focused. Deion was all about winning and making his teammates better. So, pretty special human being. I really enjoyed my time with him.
Well, Jim, we're hoping the apple doesn't fall far from the tree in a lot of those respects when it comes to Shador.
That kind of sounds like what we've been saying about Shador Sanders, like that the images of him in the pre-draft process aren't necessarily how he's perceived isn't necessarily how he really is. So I like hearing that. That's awesome. I'm sure.
Shador is completely different. Shador than Deion, right? Because Deion didn't come from this, right? Shador kind of was born into it, coached by his dad his entire life, was exposed to the high life his whole life, and then, unlike everybody else in college, was paid like a pro. Like he made more money in college than he is from the Browns the next 4 years. Like, he was buying a Rolls Royce while he was sitting there in college. Like that's not normal. And I remember when Deion set up a time with Tom Brady for them to work out. And Deion asked, Tom to give Shador advice. And Tom told him work ethic, forget the Rolls, forget all that other stuff, work, repair, work. So, we'll see. I think the best thing that could have happened to Shador was the fact that he fell to the fifth round. I don't think there could have been anything better because I think the media and the world set him up where he was expecting to go first round. He was expecting to be gone at 9 if he didn't go, with the Giants or at very least 21 to Pittsburgh, and they all passed on him. And they all passed on him because the way he presented himself in his meetings were how he was brought up. Right. And that isn't going to fly with NFL guys. It's just not. And so I think the experience of, oh, my God, I fell to the fifth round. Oh, my God, that's how people perceive me. I think it's the best thing that could have happened to him because now he's humble, period. And I think in his heart, I'm sure being Deion's son, that he's made of the right things. And I'm sure that he's going to end up being a first round type talent when it's all said and done.
I tell you what, Jim, our listeners came for the baseball takes and they stayed for the Shador Sanders takes. So this is some good stuff. To get to baseball and the topic at hand here, and we've got the Guardians game on here in studio. Last year, we know that this team's resounding strength was their bullpen. What would you say this year, though, the Guardians' strength is? Because it feels like they're kind of winning in spite of not being great at any one thing. Obviously, right now, they're in the midst of a losing streak, but they've been able to sort of stay afloat despite not being great at any one thing at this point in the season.
Well, I mean, I think the disappointing thing for me is, you know, what are they, 23rd, I think, in runs scored and 21 in team ERA?
Yeah.
You know, and so to be able to win games when you're sitting there close to the bottom third, I think speaks a lot to Stephen Vogt, the manager, speaks a lot to a leader like Jose Ramirez, finding a way to win. But I don't think we should ignore the fact that it's been a disappointing start. Now, I think we all thought it would be a four-team race. I think some things have gone well in terms of having the power that Kyle Manzardo, you know, has provided, has been really positive, which is good. But to me, you know, looking at this thing, there's been too much inconsistencies on both sides of the ball. The good news is you're right in the middle of a race. You're in a division that is winnable, a division where there could be a wild card team that comes from the division. So I think those aspects are good. But look, I don't think any of us, I'm sure you guys didn't expect that this Cleveland Guardians bullpen would be as dominant as last year. It's hard to do. Looks like Kate Smith has been pretty similar. Hunter Gaddis has been phenomenal most of the year, which is great. But, you know, I think when you look at it from year to year, it's hard to repeat a bullpen at the level they threw out there last year.
Jim Bowden joining us here on 92.3 The Fan. Jim, let me ask you, as a former executive, how do you balance out? I got a problem right now with Carlos Santana. He always gets hotter when it warms up, but at this point, he's closer. And Mark Grace is my favorite player growing up by a long shot, but he's closer to Mark Grace. Great defensive player, doesn't have much pop, not hitting much than he ever was the Carlos Santana we knew in some of the first iterations of him being here in Cleveland Guardians uniform. How do you balance out having him play instead of having DeLauder, CJ Kafis, some of these other guys that are doing really well in the minors?
Yeah, there comes a time where you have to move on, and it's hard when you have a good makeup character guy like Carlos Santana who helps your clubhouse, someone that you've been loyal to and been loyal to you. You know, it's hard to move on. That's why Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff get paid the big bucks, because it's hard to make those decisions, but you have to make it. I mean, we can't deny the fact that Carlos Santana is 39 years old. You can't ignore that. You know, I went on foul territory the other day, and they were asking me, because there's two catchers on that show, AJ Pierzynski and Eric Kratz, and they were all upset because the Dodgers released 35-year-old Austin Barnes and brought up Dalton Rushing, and they were upset about that because, you know, Barnes was the private, you know, catcher for Kershaw, and he's a veteran, and, you know, how's a young kid going to come up and you know, sit there and perform when he's not playing every day? And I said, look, there's a time, and I agree with the Dodgers' decision, there's a time where you have to move on, and I know it's hard, but you have to move on, and you have to get younger, and you can't keep blocking a prospect when he's ready. And so when you look at the Dodgers, I thought a year ago they should have moved on from Chris Taylor for Andy Pajas, and they didn't. They waited until this year. In fact, they waited until this week to move on from Chris Taylor, who was done last year. But now when you look at the Dodgers, bringing up Dalton Rushing to replace Austin Barnes, letting Andy Pajas be a regular player and moving on from Chris Taylor, that's going to make the Dodgers stronger. And, you know, a roster is only as good as your 26th man. You know, a restaurant, when you go to a nice restaurant, it's only as good as the bathroom. I mean, you could talk about how good the food is, right, and everything. You go into the bathroom, it's a junkie or there's urine on the floor, then that's what your restaurant is. And that's the same thing with the back of the roster. So, you know, Santana, it's a tough call. You know, you tend to give the veteran a little bit more rope than you do other guys for that reason. You have to measure what he means in the clubhouse, but you also can't be afraid to move on. And, you know, you are what you are in the standings. You know, you're a fourth-place team right now. That's what you are. And you look at where you are in team ERA and run scored, and you can't deny that you're in the bottom third of the 30 clubs. That's not good enough. So at some point, if he doesn't start to turn the corner – you know, we're almost at Memorial Day. You know, after 2 months, you pretty much know what you are, and you get the next 2 months to fix it.
Jim, as somebody who did this for a living or worked so closely in baseball and built rosters the way you did, I'm curious because, like, the Guardians front office gets resoundingly praised for their ability to stay competitive while on a restrictive budget, if you will. And that, but it always seems like they also end up coming up short in that way. Like they never quite do enough to get over that hump. How do you sort of assess as a former GM yourself, how the Guardians do business, how they sort of manage these things, and you know whether or not they are doing enough to put themselves in a position to actually win a championship.
Well, I can tell you that Chris Anthony and Mark Chernoff do as good a job as anybody in baseball with the revenue sources that they're able to access and the budgets that they're working under. They do an amazing job. They're extremely disciplined. They do a good job in the draft. They do a good job developmental-wise. They do a good job from an analytic position. Like every team, they don't hit on every one of their trades, you know, but nobody does. Not even the best in the game do. I always think when I see a situation like this, to answer your question, it's more of an ownership thing. You know, you need an owner to step in and say, "Yeah, I want to go the extra yard, and I want to keep Francisco Lindor, or I want you to go out and get me this free agent." Like, it takes an owner to do that. You know, the president and the GM are paid to stay within that budget. The owner's got to want to win. The owner's got to look at a team that makes it to the ALCS against the Yankees, and then walks into the offseason and says, "Let's go get two more pieces and try to make a run in 25 before we have to back off a little bit," rather than, "Okay, it's time to trade Andrés Giménez. It's time to reduce payroll and kind of reallocate." So to me, it's an owner thing. Look, I gotta tell you, and I promise you, every president GM of baseball ops, they all want $400 million payrolls, and they all want to win. Every single one. None of them are sitting there trying to save money for their owner and trying to make sure that profit is better. They're carrying out what the owner of the team wants in the bottom line and doing it to the best of their ability. And Chris Anthony and Mike Chernoff do that successfully.
Yeah, no question about that. Jim, let me ask you, going to some other teams around the AL Central here and trying to stack up the division, do you think the Tigers and what they're doing right now, is that sustainable?
Yeah, it's sustainable for sure, as long as their pitching stays healthy. Now, I'm not going to tell you I think they're going to end up with the best record in the American League, because I don't. And, you know, I still think at the end of the day, the Yankees and Rangers are the two best teams in the league for me. But here's the thing about the Tigers. Their rotation 1-5 is better than everybody in the American League if it's healthy. And it's got more upside than what they've done. Now, certainly, Reese Olson just went on the IL. Casey Mize has gone on the IL. Jackson Jobe is learning how to command and finish his fastball, which he hasn't been able to do yet. So there are things to do. But in general, their 1-5 is better than everybody else's. And that's the difference maker. They also have three impact hitters. Kerry Carpenter is the most underrated hitter in baseball against right-handed pitching. He is elite. He's top three in the sport. He should be in the conversation with, you know, the Shohei Ohtanis and the Yordan Alvarezes and that group against right-handed pitching. And then you got Riley Green, who's going to be an all-star. You got Spencer Torkelson's going to hit 30, driving 100. And then some things have gone right for them, right? Javier Baez, for whatever reason, has learned how to play baseball again after 3 years of not knowing how, and could be comeback player of the year. I'm not sure it's sustainable, but we're going to find out. And A.J. Hinch has won a World Series. I covered him, you know, during several postseasons. He's an elite manager. So, yeah, I do think the Tigers are for real. I think they're the team to beat in the Central for me. But again, like everybody else, they got to stay healthy.
Jim, you mentioned the Yankees and the Rangers as maybe your two best teams in the AL. I'm curious, just in general across the league, the Dodgers obviously are a juggernaut. They've built that roster that way, the defending champions. Which team or teams do you think actually have the best chance to knock off a team like LA come postseason time?
Yeah, so the whole thing about the Dodgers is you have to tell me what's going to happen with the health of the rotation. So Yamamoto is a Cy Young candidate. He's a lead. He's a one. They don't have anybody else behind them that isn't on the IL, because the next three guys, their next best three starters, are Blake Snell, Shohei Ohtani, and Tyler Glasnow. All three are on the injured list. Now, Ohtani will be back in the second half. He's been throwing his two-seam and four-seam and splitter. He hasn't thrown his breaking balls yet. That'll come later. But, you know, he's the top of the rotation guy. Snell and Glasnow, when healthy, they're ones. If all four of those guys are healthy come October, they are the team to beat. They will run the table. That being said, if this is the rotation they're going to have, it's not a slam dunk they're going to be able to hold off the Padres to win this division, because the Padres are really good, and they can beat the Dodgers. And the Phillies are really good, without a doubt. And, you know, if Aaron Nola can turn things around, I mean, Zach Wheeler is going to be a Cy Young candidate like Yamamoto the entire year. Jesus Luzardo has been absolutely lights out. Nick Abel came up and outpitched Paul Skenes without a walk, which has been his problem. And Andrew Painter is going to be ready in the second half. So Phillies, Padres, Dodgers are the three best teams in my opinion, in the National League. And look, the Cubs have a great offense, without a doubt, and they're going to be in a conversation. I'm never going to rule out Mets, Braves, Diamondbacks. But that being said, to answer your question specifically, it's Dodgers, Padres, Phillies in the National League.
Jim, fantastic insight. Of course, we check you out at CBS Sports, The Athletic, and Sirius XM MLB Radio. Appreciate you giving us a few minutes, and hopefully we'll catch up with you later. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.